We'll be looking at the offering of Isaac this morning in Genesis chapter 22. We looked at the outline last hour. If you weren't here, we did a little introduction last hour, but we'll jump right into it this hour. But we have a little outline that kind of helps put it together. We're going to look first at the statement of the test. Now, this is going to be a test of Abraham's faith and the test that God uses to determine or to show everybody that Abraham was a faithful man. Now, he didn't test him because he didn't know how he was going to work out in the test. God knew that. He knows everything. What he does is he tests his people to show others faithfulness. In verse 3 through 10, we'll have the obedience of Abraham to this test. And it's almost mind-boggling how Abraham obeyed this test. And then in 11 through 14, the provision for Abraham. And in 15 through 19, the blessing on Abraham. So that's the major portion of this chapter, considering the offering of Isaac. So let's start right in with it. First, we'll look at the statement of the test in verse 1 and 2. Chapter 22, verse 1 reads, "Now it came about after these things that God tested Abraham and said to him, Abraham, and he said, Here I am. He said, Take now your son, your only son, whom you love, Isaac, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I will tell you." Now that's a statement of the test. So testing, remember, was a major feature of Abraham's life. He was tested. In Genesis 12:1, remember, he was tested. Look back at Genesis 12:1, where it says, "Now the Lord said to Abraham, Go forth from your country, from your relatives, from your father's house, to the land which I will show you." So he was asked to leave his home and his family, and he wasn't even told where he was to go. God said, "You just leave and I'll show you where to go." So that was a test of Abraham's faith. Another test was that he was supposed to have a seed, a posterity, a son to carry on his family. And he had to wait 25 years for that promise to be fulfilled. In the meantime, he tried to fulfill it himself, remember, with Hagar and Ishmael. But he had to wait 25 years from the time God promised him a son until he actually had him. Now think about that. He's waited 25 years to have a son. Now in chapter 21, we find out he has a son. And now he's commanded, well, first he was commanded to expel his son Ishmael, whom he loved. He loved Ishmael, remember? He said, "Lord, I wish you would put the blessing on Ishmael instead of giving me another son." So he did love Ishmael. It wasn't that he didn't like him, but he had to expel him because Ishmael posed a threat to the genuine seed, that is Isaac. And we saw that in the last chapter when he was mocking Isaac when he was born, or when he was circumcised at the circumcision ceremony. So Abraham was asked to send his son, Ishmael, and his mother into the desert. And of course, they immediately ran out of water, and God saved them there and prospered Ishmael. But Abraham trusted God to send away his son. Now, chapter 22 is going to be the climactic test that Abraham has. This is the big one, so to speak. It's going to be the biggest test, the climax of the tests. And we just read about it in the first two verses. Let's look at the preparation for the test in verse 1 now. We're going to find that God is the source of the test. You know, Abraham didn't think up this test himself. The Canaanites, where he lived, and the Philistines, often offered their children as sacrifices to appease their gods. That wasn't unheard of. But that's not what happened here. Abraham didn't get that idea. Well, I'm going to do what the surrounding community does, and I'm going to offer up my son Isaac to appease my God. It was not his idea. It was not Abraham's idea to appease God. It was God's idea. So when God said to him, God tested Abraham and said to him, Abraham, and Abraham said, here I am. Now those words, here I am, that's an idiom in the Hebrew language. And what it means is two things. First, it means I am ready to listen. And second, it means I'm ready to act on what you say. So Abraham committed to the act before he even knew what it was. It's implied in that little idiom, here I am. It means we would say maybe, I'm at your disposal, God. When God said, Abraham, Abraham said, I'm at your disposal. Tell me what to do, and I'll do it. So he committed actually to the act before he even knew what it was. Just like back in chapter 12, he committed to leave his home and family and tell him and go where God would tell him before he knew where God would tell him to go. He might have told him to go, live in Jackson County or something terrible like that. There's probably half of you live in Jackson County and won't be back. There's nothing really wrong with Jackson County. But, God, he committed to do it before he even knew what it was. So here's the command in verse 2. He said, take now your son, your only son, whom you love, Isaac, and go to the land of Moriah, and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I will tell you. That's the command. We get some details in this command. First, the relationship of Isaac. He says, your son. Take your son. Now, this is the son that he had waited for and prayed for at least 25 years. And he finally had him now. And God says, I want you to take your son, your only son. Does anybody have a question with that? Yeah. What about Ishmael? Didn't he have another son? God said, take your son, your only son. Well, that word only doesn't mean only in the sense of number. It means, it's a word that designates something that's unique. Unique. Yachid is the word in Hebrew. And it means something that's completely unique. Now, Isaac was the only son born according to the promise. Ishmael was not born according to the promise. He was born according to the flesh, like all the rest of us are. And Isaac was the only son born through supernatural means. Ishmael was the son that was born through natural means. So that's what he means by your only son, your absolutely unique son. And the value of Isaac, whom you love. I said last hour, I was being kind of flippant, but it wasn't a son that Abraham didn't like. It wasn't like my son was rebellious, all his life, and here's a good excuse to get rid of the little blankety blank. That wasn't Abraham's attitude at all. He loved Isaac. Isaac was everything that they expected and more. And we'll find out as we read through the life of Abraham and the life of Isaac that he was everything that Abraham could ever have expected and more. And Abraham loved him. So here's God telling him, take him out, offer him as an offering. So what is the test? The test is, do you love the gift more than the giver? And that's the test. If you value the giver more than the gift, that is, if he values God more than Isaac, then he will pass the test. And it's just that simple. It says, if you value God more than you value Isaac, you'll give Isaac as a sacrifice. So that's the test. That's a tough test. I hope I never have to come anywhere near a test like that. Because those are two tough choices, aren't they? You either love God and give up your son, or you give up your son, or you don't give up your son, and you disobey God. What a test. What a terrible test, we would say. Actually, it's not. Now, the land of Moriah, and this is something to think about, it was 3 days' journey from where Abraham was. In fact, it is in the vicinity of Calvary. Look at 2 Chronicles chapter 3. It's the only other place where we have this land of Moriah mentioned in the Old Testament. But in 2 Chronicles chapter 3 and verse 1, we find out a little bit about it when it says, then Solomon began to build the house of the Lord in Jerusalem on Mount Moriah. So Solomon built his temple on Mount Moriah. Now, where did Solomon build his temple? Well, it was near Calvary in Jerusalem. So that's where he's taking Isaac to offer him up as a sacrifice. I'll ask a question then. Why did God make Abraham take a 3-day journey to offer up his son? Why didn't he just say, well, build an altar here and offer up your son on it? He gave him 3 days to think about it. 3 days to mull over it. Just what would your thoughts be during those 3 days that they're traveling to Mount Moriah to kill your son, basically? And God gives him 3 days to think this over. God did not want just somebody who would impulsively obey and then regret later. He wanted to give Abraham time to think this over. Do you really know what you're going to do? And Abraham did. And he thought it over. In fact, he seems almost anxious. In the obedience of Abraham, and that's in verses 3 through 10. Let's read those verses. And you see how he's almost anxious to obey God. Now, I don't know if I'd be anxious to sacrifice a loved one. That's taking things a little far. But look at verse 3. It says, so Abraham rose early in the morning and saddled his donkey and took two of his young men with him and Isaac his son. And he split wood for the burnt offering and arose and went to the place of which God had told him. On the third day, Abraham raised his eyes and saw the place from a distance. Abraham said to his young men, stay here with the donkey, and I and the lad will go over there, and we will worship and return to you. Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on Isaac his son, and he took in his hand the fire and the knife, so the two of them walked on together. Isaac spoke to Abraham his father, and said, my father. And he said, here I am, my son. And he said, "Behold, the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering?" And Abraham said, "God will provide for himself the lamb of the burnt offering, my son." So the two of them walked on together. Then they came to the place of which God had told him. And Abraham built the altar there and arranged the wood and bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. Abraham stretched out his hand and took the knife to slay his son. So that's the obedience of Abraham. And again, note how it's almost anxious. It was immediate. He didn't hesitate a moment. He did not ask for more time. What would you have said to God? "Gosh, God, can't you give me a little more time? Do I have to do it right away?" No, he got up early to get ready to do it. Now, if it was me, I would have slept in. Anyway, he got up early. He's anxious to get going. Abraham takes this as another opportunity to obey God. Now, we said, remember, Abraham, he had some good days and some bad days. He was faithful some days and some days. You know, he told people that Sarah was his sister so he could save his own hide. This is going to be his day. This is his faithful day. It was immediate obedience. It was simple obedience. Now, think about this. Remember when the two angels came and told him that Sodom was going to be destroyed? Now, he had a cousin down there, or a nephew down there, Lot. So he started to say, "God, you wouldn't destroy Sodom if there were 50 righteous people there, would you?" And he kind of went down with God to 10 people. Now, when God comes and tells him, "You're going to kill your son," or that's not exactly what he said, we'll get to that, but that's how Abraham took it. He doesn't say a word. He doesn't try to barter. He doesn't try to bicker. He doesn't try to say, "Can we put this off for a while?" He gets up immediately and gets ready for the journey. He obeys God, no questions asked. What would you have said? I tried to think what I would say to God if he told me that. Here I'd waited 25 years for a son. That son was going to be the line, the posterity. And now God says, "I want you to take that son and I want you to offer him up as a burnt offering." I might have said, "God, wait a minute. Didn't you say that Isaac was going to be the posterity? That the chosen line would go through Isaac? How come you're asking me to do this?" Abraham didn't even question God. Not once. He just did what God told him. Now notice, and I said I'd get to this, God does not say to go kill Isaac. He says, "Go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering." Now there's a difference. He's not untruthful. Of course, Abraham considers that to be an order to kill Isaac. That's the only way he could take it. How do you do a burnt offering? First you kill it, then you burn it, right? So Abraham couldn't have taken it any other way. But God didn't really tell him to kill Isaac. He said, offer him as a burnt offering. So every word becomes important. Because God is going to say, don't kill him, as you all know. So, Abraham's obedience was simple. Now, why was he so simple here and so complicated when God said he was going to destroy Sodom? I mean, think about it. You know, Lot was only his nephew. This is his son. Not only is it his son, it's the son of the chosen line that will be nation Israel. And yet he doesn't say a word to God here. He just says, okay. Why the difference? We'll see in a moment. Abraham's obedience was consistent. on day one. What do I mean by consistent? On day one, what did Abraham do? God told him to do something. He did it. It was no questions asked. He just did it. On day two, while they were traveling, did he change his mind and come back? Nope. Consistent obedience. He kept on. On day three, it was still the same. No questions asked. So it was consistent obedience from the very first time God told him to do that until he did it. There weren't any lapses. Now, you may have seen movies where Abraham agonizes over this and can't decide whether he should do it or not. But I can say from the text of the Bible, if he did that, God did not say so. Because there's no hint of any reluctance, there's no hint of any hesitation in any of this. It was just consistent obedience to what God told him to do. You can also say it was lonely. And why I say that is because most Christians, like the group here at Beth Haven, what happens at Beth Haven when someone's in trouble? I know, because I was in trouble once. Remember my knee? I couldn't afford the deductible on the insurance. What happened? You guys gave enough money to get my teeth fixed, too. It's amazing. We have a support group here that is absolutely amazing. When people are in trouble, everybody pulls together. So we have trouble understanding this. Who did Abraham have to encourage him, to help him? When he got to Moriah and he got off that donkey and took his son Isaac, he told even the guys that came with him to wait there. Where was Sarah? She was back in where they'd been. She didn't come along. There was nobody there, nobody but him. He had no support group. You know what? Once I was talking to a friend of mine, Carl Dendy. A lot of you guys know Carl. And he has a extremely excruciating, painful disease. Anybody know what it's called? Reflex sympathetic dystrophy. Reflex sympathetic dystrophy. And it's excruciatingly painful. And Carl is allergic to painkillers. So he has to suffer with this. And I was talking to him one time and asking him how it was going. And he said, you know, God has been really gracious and helpful to me because he sent me a lot of support. And that support mostly had skin. And that's the way we feel about support, isn't it? And I do too. What he meant was he had a good support group of people there to support him and help him through. Abraham had absolutely no one, no human support whatsoever. And yet, he still obeyed. What was his attitude? In verse 5, it says, Abraham said to his young men, "Stay here with the donkey, and I and the lad will go over there, and we will worship and return to you." He never had the attitude, okay, God, you want me to do this, I'll do it. But I sure don't like it. He never had that attitude. It was never, well, if I have to, you know, I guess I will. And keep in mind, God never hides the faults of his people in the Bible. If Abraham would have faulted there, it would be recorded. Because Abraham's other faults were recorded. Abraham, like I said, like most of us, had his good moments and bad moments. He tells about Abraham in Egypt when he tried to pass Sarah off as his sister, and with Abimelech, he tried to pass Sarah off as his sister to save his own hide. So God doesn't hide the faults of his people. And yet here's Abraham's attitude this time, and the text says nothing about any hesitation whatsoever. This is the other side of Abraham. This is Abraham past. Remember when we talked about him and Abimelech and telling Abimelech that Sarah was his sister? And when we finished that lesson, I said, from here on out, Abraham never questions God again. And this is what we're seeing. This is the mature Abraham. He never questions God. What does he see when God tells him to offer up Isaac? He sees an opportunity to obey God. His attitude was simply this: I will honor God no matter what the circumstances are. No matter what. Notice verse 5. It says, Abraham said to his young men, stay here with the donkey, and I and the lad will go over there, and we will worship and return to you. The pronoun we goes with the words worship and return. He says, we will go worship and we will return to you. Now, why on earth would he say that if he was going to take Isaac up and slay him and burn his dead body? Why would he do that? Conflict is simply this. What did he say in Genesis 12:1? He said, through Isaac your descendants shall be named. That's what he said. Now in chapter 22, he basically says, kill Isaac. Now, that's something that's hard to figure out, isn't it? How is God going to do that? He told me that Isaac will be the son whom my posterity will come from, and now he's telling me to kill Isaac. So what can I do? Your descendants will be through Isaac. Now I want you to kill him. Now talk about a test. That's a test. Abraham knew that dead people don't usually bear children. Dead people never bear children. From human viewpoint, what God is telling Abraham to do is completely opposite. It's from the human viewpoint, it's silly, the foolish things, back in 1 Corinthians. So if Abraham kills Isaac, then who's going to keep the promise of the descendants through Isaac? If he doesn't kill Isaac, he'll be disobeying a direct order from God. What a situation to be in. When God labels this a test, we saw that back in verse 1, that God tested Abraham. God tells Abraham, I gave you a promise here. I tell you to do something here. The two seem totally contradictory. Can't happen. And yet Abraham is to obey him. Look up at Hebrews chapter 11. Again, we were there last hour. We'll look at this again. Hebrews chapter 11. Verse 17 through 19. Verse 17 says, by faith Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac. And he, who had received the promises, was offering up his only begotten son. It is he to whom it was said, in Isaac your descendants shall be called. He considered that God is able to raise people even from the dead, from which he also received him back as a type. So there's the conflict, and there's the resolution. He offered up Isaac as God had commanded, fully expecting that God would raise him up so they could return together. That's why he said to these guys, Isaac and I are going to go worship, and we will return. He fully expected God to resurrect Isaac. He knew God could do that. Abraham was a man of faith, and he knew God could do anything, and he knew God had made a promise to him. So he obeyed God, even though it looked like it would ruin the promise. He'd learned his lesson over the years. Now back to Genesis, we find his obedience was centered in God in verse 6 through 8, where it says, Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on his son, and he took in his hand the fire and the knife, and the two of them walked on together. Isaac spoke to Abraham, his father, and said, My father. And he said, Here I am, my son. And he said, Behold, the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering? And Abraham said, God will provide for himself the lamb for the burnt offering, my son. So the two of them walked on together. So his obedience was completely God-centered. When Isaac asked him, Where's the lamb for the sacrifice? What could he have said? You're it. You're the lamb for the sacrifice. But he didn't do that. He said, God will provide the lamb. The best approach to any question you can imagine is to focus on God. Focus on God. God will take care of it. I won't. And that's what Abraham did. He just focused on God. Isaac asked him, Where's the lamb? He says, Don't worry, God will provide the lamb. That's a lesson we can learn in answering questions. To focus on God does not mean complete disclosure. And we call that being brutally honest. You know, that's not necessary to be. We may think it's a lie to withhold information. But that's not true, is it? Abraham withheld information. He knew Isaac was to be the offering. He said, Don't worry, God will provide the offering, which is true, but it wasn't brutally honest. He didn't say, You're going to be the offering. I'm going to cut you with this knife. I'm going to tie you to a pile of wood and burn you. That would have been the honest response, right? But no, that's not what he said. He said, Don't worry, God will provide. His faith was complete. His obedience was complete in verse 9 and 10. When we read verse 9 and 10, I want you to think about Isaac for a minute. Verse 9 says, They came to the place of which God had told him, and Abraham built the altar there and arranged the wood and bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. Abraham stretched out his hand and took the knife to slay his son. What complete obedience. But stop and think a minute about Isaac. Look back at verse 6. It says, Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on Isaac, his son. So Isaac carried the wood. What does that mean? Isaac wasn't a little baby. Isaac was a grown-up person. He was old enough to carry the wood anyway. How old was Abraham? Abraham was 100 when he had Isaac. So he's 100 plus. Isaac is a strapping young teenager at least. And Abraham tied him up. Does anything sound funny here? If I'd have been Isaac, I'd have been 5 miles away by the time he got the rope out. You're crazy, Dad. I mean, I'm sorry, but your intentions may be good, but you're nuts. I'm getting out of here. He didn't do that. The only reason he was tied up was that he allowed Abraham to tie him up. He was a strapping young man, and here was Abraham, the old guy, and he didn't just hoof it out. He didn't hit his dad and run off. He obeyed God, too. So the faith of Isaac is important here. Many people skip over that, you know, it's all on Abraham. But Abraham, or Isaac, I should say, his faith allowed him to suffer and die for God. That was his part in it. He was to suffer and die. So that's our lesson. You know, maybe others had very active faiths. Others had, like Abraham, he went to offer his son. Isaac was passive. He took it. He suffered and died. So Isaac, his job was to suffer and die. And they were both supported by the same promise. Isaac knew the promise as well as Abraham, didn't he? He knew that he was the chosen one, the one who would bear the line that would be nation Israel, that would produce the Savior. He knew that. And he believed God too, so he said, okay. He knew God could resurrect the dead too. So he said, okay, you know, I'll go along with this. I'll let Abraham tie me to this pile of wood. And neither one of them knew how God was going to work things out. They figured they did. It's, you know, Hebrews gives us a little hint. And they figured it would be a resurrection. But it wasn't. There was a provision and an interruption in verses 11 through 14. Verse 11 says, "But the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, 'Abraham, Abraham.' And he said, 'Here I am.' He said, 'Do not stretch out your hand against the lad and do nothing to him. For now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me.' Then Abraham raised his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him a ram caught in the thicket by his horns. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered him up for a burnt offering in the place of his son. Abraham called the name of that place, 'The Lord will provide,' just as it is said to this day, 'In the mount of the Lord it will be provided.'" So God provides help at the moment needed. This was right in what we would call the nick of time. You know, the cavalry arrived just as Abraham had his hand out with the knife. And that's when God arrived and said, "Wait a minute, don't kill him." So obedience of the heart counts in God's eyes as obedience of action. Because Abraham was ready to do it. He was all prepared in his mind, in his heart, his attitude, to slay his son for God, knowing that God would take care of the situation. And God counted that as actually doing what he had commanded. We have the doctrine of substitution in Genesis 22:13. It says, "Then Abraham raised his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him a ram caught in the thicket by his horns. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered him up for a burnt offering in the place of his son." So that's the doctrine of substitution, the basis of the gospel, in place of. Just like Christ died in place of us. Then this is an example, this is a type of the cross, as Hebrews said. And we'll look at that a little bit more next week, but that's just how we get saved. How do we get saved? Well, we believe the gospel message, and what is that message? That Christ died on the cross, and when he died there, he took our place. He didn't deserve to be on that cross. We did. But he took our place. It's called the doctrine of substitution. And that's given here in the Old Testament as a type. Just like Christ died in the place of us, that ram caught in the thicket died in the place of Isaac. So in verse 15 through 19, we have the blessing. And we've had this before, except for one thing. Verse 15 says, "Then the angel of the Lord called to Abraham a second time from heaven and said, 'By myself I have sworn, declares the Lord, because you have done this thing and have not withheld your son, your only son. Indeed, I will greatly bless you.'" We had that before. "And I will greatly multiply your seed as the stars of the heavens and as the sand which is on the seashore." And he said this to Abraham before. "And your seed shall possess the gate of their enemies." Now that's new. The seed shall possess the gate of your enemies. Now the ultimate fulfillment of that won't be until the millennial kingdom. That is when Israel, with their king, Jesus Christ, he will sit on the throne and rule the universe from the throne in the Davidic kingdom, the thousand-year kingdom, or the millennial kingdom, as we call it. So the ultimate fulfillment of this prophecy is found in the millennial kingdom. And then the conclusion in verse 19 of this section, "So Abraham returned to his young men," just like he said he would. He knew they would both return. He didn't know how. He thought it would be through a different method. "They arose and went together to Beersheba, and Abraham lived at Beersheba." Wow, what an incredible demonstration of faith in God's word. Incredible. Now, it just conclusion of chapter 2 is a short account of the sons of Abraham's brother Nahor. And you want me to read this, don't you? Okay. "Now it came about after these things that it was told Abraham, saying, 'Behold, Milcah has also borne children to your brother Nahor, Uz his firstborn, and Buz his brother, and Kemuel, and the father of Aram, and Chesed, and Hazo, and Pildash, and Jidlaf, and Bethuel. Bethuel became the father of Rebekah. These eight Milcah bore to Nahor, Abraham's brother. His concubine, whose name was Rumah, also bore Tebah, and Gaham, and Tahish, and Maacah." Father, thank you for your word, and thank you for recording the incredible faith of Abraham, faith that was so great that he loved you more than he loved the gift that you had given him and was willing to give him back, knowing that your promise would be fulfilled no matter what. Father, we pray that we can have the faith of Abraham and that we can develop it by studying and learning your word and by making good choices in our lives. In Christ's name, amen.